Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is April the 29th. We are in Shmuel Beis, Perek Tesvav, chapter 15. We're in the middle of the Perek. We are up to Pasuk Chaf Gimel 23. And we're going to Mirtz Hashem finish the parak tonight. Last thing we discussed was David and his supporters running out of Yerushalayim, and David is now reviewing who's with him, who he's got. And we just the very last thing we spoke about was Itai Hagiti, who is not Jewish, who insisted on staying with David along with his 600 men. Pasuk of Gimel, verse 23. V'chol ha'aretz bochim kol gadol, and the whole land was crying a great cry. V'chol ha'am over, and all the nation passed by. V'amelech over b'nachal Kidron, the king was passing through Nachal Kidron, the valley of Kidron. V'chol ha'am over him al pnei derech es hamidbar, and the whole nation was passing by on the way to the wilderness. V'hine gam tzadok v'chol halavim ito, and behold, also Tzadok and all the Levim with him, nosim es aron briso alokim, carrying the aron of the bris of Hashem, of the covenant of Hashem. Tzadok was a kohen; he was a kohen, but the Levim were carrying the aron. Vayatziku es aron alokim, and they stopped the aron of Hashem. They stopped as they were passing by David. Vayal Evyasar, and Evyasar literally means he went up. Adetom kol ha'am lavar min ha'ir, until the entire nation passed by the city. So the Aron stopped with David, and everybody else passed by. Now this phrase, Vayal Evyasar, went up, does not mean what it appears to mean. The Gemara speaks about it. I'm going to come back to it in just a moment. I want to read the next. I want to read the next few psukim before we come back to this word, these words, Vaya'al of Yasar. Chafei 25. Vayomar Melech Letzadok, the king said to Tzadok. So Evyasar is a Kohen, Tzadok is a Kohen. Evyasar was the Kohen Gadol. The king says to Tzadok, Hasheves Aron Ho'elokim Ho'ir, return the Aron of Hashem to the city, back to Yerushalayim, meaning back to Yerushalayim, so that when Avshalom takes over Yerushalayim, he will now have possession of the Aron of Hashem. Im emtzachin b'nei Hashem, if I find favor in the eyes of Hashem, v'hashivani, and he returns me, v'hir ani osov es naveu, and he'll show me the Aron and also his house, the house of Hashem, its place. He'll show me the Beis HaMikdash isn't built yet, but at least the place that houses the Aron. V'im ko yomar, and if so he should say, if so Hashem should say, lo chafatz tibach, I am not interested in you. Hinaniya seli kasha tov be'inav, I am here, he will do to me what is good in his eyes. So if I don't deserve to return to Yerushalayim, then I won't deserve it. So hopefully I will deserve it, and I'll come back. But for now, bring the Aron back to Yerushalayim. Vayomer HaMelech el Tzadok HaKohen, and the king said to Tzadok the Kohen, Haro'eh ata, if you see this idea to be a good idea, if this plan sits well with you, Haro'eh ata, if you see this, then I want you to do the following. Shuvah ha'ir b'shalom, return to the city in peace. Va'achima'atz bincha, and your son Achima'atz, v'Yahonasan ben Evyasar, and Yahonasan, the son of Evyasar, and we've had Yahonasan, the son of Shaul. This is a different Yahonasan. Yahonasan, the son of Evyasar. Shnei v'neichem itchem, your two sons are with you. Tzadok, your son, Evyasar, your son are with you. Ru anochi mismamea be'avros hamidbar. See, I will be, I will be waiting in the crossing of the midbar. Ad bo davar me'imachem v'hagidli, until word comes to me from you to tell me what to do. And I'll be waiting there. So, meaning, you can send word with your sons to me as spies to tell me what to do. Vayashev Tzadok ve'Avyasar Saron hu Elokim Yerushalayim. So Tzadok and Avyasar returned the Aron of Hashem to Yerushalayim. Vayeshvu Sham, and they dwelled there. So David is now formulating a plan, sending, he's this is the first set of spies that he's sending to infiltrate the camp of Avshalom. These are going to be the messengers through which he can find out what's going on. They will not be able to influence Avshalom one way or another. They're not advisors to the king, but he feels that they will be above suspicion and also have the ability to get in and out of the city without arousing suspicion. The sons of Tzadok and of Yasar. So he sends them back to be there as those who can inform David of what is going on. Now, as I mentioned, Avyasar is a Kohen. He was the Kohen Gadol, and Tzadok is a Kohen. However, first it says back in Pasuk Chaf Dalet 24 that Tzadok was with the Levim carrying the Aron, and then it says Avyasar went up, and then the king talks to Tzadok. Mm-hmm. So rather than talking to Avyasar, he talks to Tzadok. So our sages tell us that Avyasar is removed from his post as Kohen Gadol, and he's replaced by Tzadok. When it says Vaya'al Avyasar, Avyasar went up, it means he was removed. He was taken off of his post of being Kohen Gadol. That's what the Pasuk means to say. That is a Gemara that tells us that. And Tzadok takes over. Now this is the beginning of the fulfillment, I shouldn't say the beginning, because we already had part of the fulfillment. This is the continuation of the fulfillment of the nevuah that both Shmuel and Shmuel's father, Elkanah, told Eli that his children will lose the leadership of the kahuna, where Eli was the Kohen Gadol, and normally the descendant of the Kohen Gadol, the son or grandson of the Kohen Gadol, becomes the next Kohen Gadol. But Eli was informed that his family would lose that position and they would be replaced. Now, immediately, Eli's sons were killed in battle, Hophni and Pinchas. However, that didn't mean that all of his descendants were killed. They still remained alive. And Avyasar, who comes from Eli's family, was still the Kohen Gadol. But here we have that Avyasar is replaced by Tzadok. Why all of a sudden here? Could have been done any time. Why here? Because David instructed Avyasar to ask Hashem for some instructions through the Urim V'Tumim, through the breastplate, and he asked, and he wasn't answered. And then indicated that Avyasar was no longer accepted as the Kohen Gadol by Hashem. And so on the spot, he was replaced by Tzadok. And Tzadok now becomes the Kohen Gadol. Doesn't tell us what it is that David asked, although we can imagine he asked for some advice, for some help, whatever it is. But Avyasar is removed from his post, Tzadok becomes the Kohen Gadol. Now they're still functioning as partners. As you see, when they go back to the city, David says to Tzadok that you have with you your son Achimaatz and Avyasar's son Yehonasan. And those two will be the message bearers to tell me what to do. And then in Chavtesen 29, it says that Tzadok and Avyasar returned the Aron of Hashem to Yerushalayim. So Avyasar is not completely out of the picture. He has just lost his position as being the number one Kohen, the Kohen Gadol. He seems now to be like an assistant, but he's still functioning as one of the leaders of the Kohuna Gedola. In Shlomo HaMelech's time, then this transition will become complete, and Avyasar and his family will be completely removed from the leadership of the Kohuna. They will remain Kohanim, but they will be completely removed from the leadership, and only Tzadok and his children will be the Kohanim. Yeah.
Should they have been carrying the Ark, or should it have been the Levim?
The Levim are carrying it.
Well, it says Tzadok and Avyasar carried the Ark.
It says they returned it.
Oh, in my translation, it says carried the Ark.
No, they returned it. The Levim are carrying the Ark, okay, as they were before. So, unless I guess you could understand it to mean it was only them, because it could be the Levim didn't go back.
Yeah.
But the translation of the word is they returned it. It doesn't say they carried it.
Okay.
By Yashev. So Tzadok and his descendants will be the leaders of the Kohuna, while Avyasar and his descendants will eventually just be regular Kohanim. Now, I answered the question of why it happened now, because Avyasar asked and wasn't answered. But that still doesn't answer the question. So why did that happen now?
Right.
That could have happened any time. So we're going to come back to this. I want to finish the parak first and discuss a few other points. And then we're going to come back to the Tzadok / Avyasar switch, Avyasar to Tzadok, and what the deeper meaning of that is, what it has to do with the flight of David from Yerushalayim, and in general, what is going on historically over here. And this is a very, very significant event, the changing of the Kohuna Gedola from Avyasar to Tzadok. Pasuk Lamed, verse 30. V'David ole v'ma'ale hazesim. David was going up on the rise of olives. Ole uvocha, going up and crying. V'rosh lo chafoy, and his head was wrapped up. He was in mourning. V'hu holech yachif, and he was going barefoot. He was going like a mourner. He appreciated that this was a punishment to him from Hashem, as he already said before. If Hashem chooses to let me come back, then I'll see the Aron again, but if not, I won't. And Hashem will do to me as he chooses. David recognizes this is a punishment to him, what is going on. He recognizes that it has to do with what happened with Bathsheba. V'chol ha'am asher ito, and all the people that were with him, chafu ish rosho, every man covered his head, v'alu alo uvacho, they were going up and crying. V'David higid leimor, and to David it was told, saying, achi sofel bakoshrim, Im Avshalom. Ahithophel was with those who were now bound up with Avshalom. And that was devastating news. As we mentioned last time, Ahithophel was the greatest miyayetz, the greatest advisor. His wisdom was unparalleled. And the Navi tells us that asking Ahithophel for advice was like asking Hashem directly. That's how insightful he was. So if he's on the side of Avshalom, that means that Avshalom has an incredible strategic advantage. And now David gets that news. Vayomer David, and David says, Sakel na esatzas Ahithophel, Hashem. Hashem, please make foolish the advice of Ahithophel. So David davens to Hashem that he should ruin the flawless advice of Ahithophel. We say every day in Shmoneh Esrei, we say Hashem should hafer atzasam kalkel nachashavtam. We say about the evil people, our enemies, Hashem should nullify their advice and mess up their thoughts. So that's what David is davening for here. That should happen to Ahithophel. The Gemara tells us that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the leader of the Jewish people was Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great sage, just to give you a sense of who he was, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, who were in turn the Rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is greater. He's the one of the ultimate mentors of Rabbi Akiva. And he shepherded us Jews through the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So he's the one who was smuggled out of Yerushalayim. He faked his own death and was smuggled out of Yerushalayim to be buried outside of Yerushalayim. And when he got out, he got up off of the coffin and went to talk to the Roman general, who at that time was Vespasian, was Aspasianus, who then became the Caesar. But at that point, he was the general to destroy Yerushalayim. So he impressed Aspasianus incredibly. He was able to figure things out that Aspasianus knew that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai couldn't possibly know. And it impressed him immensely. And then when, and because of that, Aspasianu said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what would you like? So he asked for three things. He asked that Yavne and its wise men should be saved, because that's where the seat of Torah was in Yavne. He asked for a doctor to heal Rav Tzadok, who was a great sage who had been fasting for Yerushalayim for many, many years, and he was extremely weak. He was fasting during the day, eating at night, but he was very, very weak. And he also asked that the line of David HaMelech should not be wiped out. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai should have asked that Yerushalayim be spared. But Hashem didn't want that to happen. And the Gemara cites the pasuk Meshiv, Meshiv Das Chachamim Achar. I think I have the wording a little bit wrong. But that Hashem will make the minds of the wise men turn around. If he doesn't want something to happen, the wisest of people won't think straight. Even Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Hashem didn't want Yerushalayim to be spared. So he caused him not to ask for the obvious request. And there's one other thing that happens in the Gemara over there. The Gemara invokes the same point, that Hashem caused Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to make a mistake in order to prevent the saving of Yerushalayim. Here, David is, this of course precedes, David here precedes that by hundreds of years, nearly 1,000 years. But David here is davening that Achitofel's great advice should be undermined. On base 32. And I'm sorry, that is going to play a big role later. We're going to see later that Achitofel is going to give advice, which had Avshalom listened to it, Avshalom definitely would have been successful. But David's davening is going to cause that Avshalom will not follow the advice of Achitofel. And that's going to mean the undoing of Avshalom. And Achitofel knows it. We're going to see later, Achitofel will react knowing that if his advice is not followed, they're going to lose. And when Avshalom doesn't follow his advice, he takes action. The not following Achitofel's advice was suicidal, was unheard of. Nobody would have ever done that. And that's what David is davening over here, that the whole situation should get messed up.
But it's getting messed up in a different way. It's not getting messed up because Achitofel gave that advice.
That's right. That's right. In a way, it's a greater... Well, we'll see later what the results of this are, but in a way, it actually... It emphasizes the mistake of Avshalom with an Achitofel. In other words, if you want to bring out who's
the right, result was the same,
right?
But it wasn't because Achitofel gave better.
That's right.
It was because Avshalom didn't. Maybe it can be looked at that Achitofel didn't give advice in such a way that Avshalom would take it.
Well, we're going to see later how it happens, and this is going to be very significant. So let's hold off with that, and we won't see it tonight. It'll be next time, Mir Sasha. Vayihi David ba'ad harosh, and David came to the head, meaning to the high area, asher yishtachav Hashem le'Elokim, that he would bow there to Hashem. Vihinei likraso Hushai ha'arki, and behold, to greet him was Hushai ha'arki. Hushai ha'arki is a friend of David's, a close friend of David's, a confidant of David's. Karua kutanto, his cloak was torn, his tunic was torn. Va'adama al-rosho, and he had dirt on his head. He was in mourning over over what's happening to David. Now, here we're going to have the most significant. David has so far has done two things to try to undermine Avshalom. Number one, well, I guess the first thing is they escaped. But besides that, he sent Tzadok and Avyasar back to Yerushalayim with the Aron, which would seem to mean loyalty. They could have gone with David with the Aron, which they did. But David sends them back so that Avshalom will presume they are loyal to him. And that way their sons can then be the messengers to David. That's one. Two is he davens that the Eitzah, the advice of Achitofel, should be ruined one way or another. And here he's going to make his third and most important move. Vayomalo David. David said to Hushai, Imavarta iti, if you pass with me, you come along with me, Vayisa alai lamasa, you'll be on me a burden. You'll be yet another person who we need to clothe and feed and find shelter for, and you won't be helpful. I don't know this for a fact, but I imagine Hushai was not valuable from a military standpoint, from a fighting standpoint. V'im ha'ir tashuv, but if you go back to the city, v'amarta l'avshalom, and you say to Avshalom, avdecha ani ha'melech ayeh, I, your servant, I am to the king, I will be, eved avicha v'ani me'az, I've always been the servant of your father, v'ata v'ani avdecha, now I'll be your servant. If you make it clear to Avshalom that just as you serve me, you'll now serve him, that you are saying that you recognize that he's the new king, you can be the one through whom the Eitzah, the advice of Achitofel, can be nullified. So David is planting a fifth column. He's sending Hushai Ha'arki back to Yerushalayim to be the one who will attempt to undermine Achitofel. Now, this is first of all, besides what we mentioned before, that it sounds like Hushai Ha'arki was not valuable from a military standpoint, but it does seem that Hushai was perhaps not on the level of Achitofel, but was a clever and wise person. And David thought to himself, this is a person who might be able to pull it off, who might actually be able to undermine Achitofel. And then he gives him the rest of the plan. V'halo imcha sham tzadok ve'avyasar ha-kohanim. And with you, behold, with you there will be tzadok and avyasar the kohanim. V'ayal kol ha-davar asher tishma bibeis ha-melech. Anything you hear from the king's house, tagid le-tzadok ule-avyasar ha-kohanim, tell to tzadok and avyasar the kohanim. Hine sham imam shnei v'nehem. Behold, there with them will be their two sons. Achi ma'atz le-tzadok v'yohonosan le-avyasar. Achi ma'atz the son of tzadok and yohonosan the son of avyasar. Ushlachtem biyadam elai. You will send in their hands to me, kol davar asher tishmau, anything that they will hear. Vayavo Hushai re'ed David ha'ir, and Hushai, the friend of David, came to the city. Avshalom yavo Yerushalayim, and now Avshalom comes to Yerushalayim. So those who are being sent back will be able to claim allegiance to Avshalom by the very fact that they're still there, that they haven't run away. Everybody else ran with David. Tzadok, Avyasar, their sons, stayed. And more critically, they stayed with the Aron. Here is a powerful force, a powerful item that could have gone with David. Not just the Aron itself, but the Kohen Gadol with all of his big day kahuna. They could have gone with David, yet they stayed. That's a real prize for Avshalom. And the fact that they stayed with the Aron and they're here at Avshalom's disposal, that in and of itself caused Avshalom to believe that they were loyal to him. Because what are they doing here? Hushai is a little trickier. Because it's true Hushai is here, but he's not giving anything to Avshalom. He's not preserving anything for Avshalom. And he is also known as a great friend and confidant of David. So Hushai really has to pull it off to be able to convince Avshalom that he has changed loyalties, that he's decided that Avshalom is the wave of the future. And out with the old, in with the new. We want to modernize, and we'll go with you, Avshalom. So that's going to be coming up. Yeah.
I think it's significant that we learned already that only a few women were left behind. So there was nobody there to say that the Kohanim had left with the Ark. In other words, there's nobody to tell on them that they hadn't been there all along, which is really important.
Right, that's right. They want to make it appear
as if they've never left.
Right, that they were there the whole time. That in fact, maybe even that they hid, you know, so that they wouldn't be, they wouldn't be convinced to leave.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be possible if there had been people around to see them go and see them come
back. That's right. Where they locked themselves up inside the Beis HaMikdash, something like that, in order to make it appear. The Navi doesn't tell us what they did, but we can imagine that they did something like that, that they made it look very convincing, that they withstood the pressure to go along with David. And Hushai is going to have to do something similar to that. Ultimately, we will see that Hushai is going to be the one who will undermine Achitofel. And that will play itself out as we go along. Now, before we go back to the Tzadok Aviasar switch, I want to make one more observation for you, and that is in Pasuk, Lamed Beis 32, it says that David came to the Rosh, to the head, that he would bow down to Hashem. The Gemara tells us that this term Rosh, to the head, which means the top of the mountain, can also mean the Avodah Zarah, the idolatry. The Gemara cites a pasuk, cites a verse in Daniel where the term Rosh is referring to an Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara tells us David wanted to worship Avodah Zarah. He wanted to worship idols. That right here, he was going to start bowing down to an idol. Now, the question would be, of course, why? But more than that, it doesn't seem to make sense. See, we could argue that David was feeling rejected by Hashem. David was feeling that there's no hope anymore. And so he gives up and he worships idols. The problem is, the very last thing that we read in the previous pasuk, in the previous verse, is that he davened to Hashem that Hashem should undermine, should nullify the Eitzah of Achitofel. That seems very disjointed, that he just finished davening to Hashem and now he's going to worship Avodah Zarah. Where is that coming from? So the Gemara tells us that he was about to bow. I don't know if he made something into an Avodah Zarah or whatever it is, but he was about to bow to an Avodah Zarah. And apparently it would be public. It was on top of a mountain. Like, people were going to see that he was going to do this. And at that moment, Hushai Ha'arki happens on the scene. And he says to David right away, Hushai, now what is he going to say to David? You're his really, really, you're David's really close friend. What are you going to say if David's about to bow down and you're going to presume, you don't know that David just davened to Hashem, you're going to presume that David has given up hope, that he's feels there's no, Hashem has forsaken me, and he's, God forbid, he's going over to Avodah Zarah. What should Hushai say to David to stop David from doing it? So Hushai says to David, Yomru, people will say, Melech Shekamoscha Yavod Avodah Zarah, a king of your stature should bow to an Avodah Zarah? He didn't say, David, how can you, it's Usher, you can't do this. David, he didn't say that. If a person is despondent and depressed and feeling rejected, telling the person that it's prohibited is never going to work. We've all been, either ourselves or seen others in this position, you can't stop a person who is feeling rejected, feeling down. You tell them, oh, don't do that, it's Usher. They have no willpower to stop themselves from something that's prohibited. Hushai instead used the opposite approach. He said, David, a man of your stature, you're the great David. What will people say? People will say, a king of your stature bow to Avodah Zarah? That's how Hushai tried to stop David. David responded to Hushai, no, you don't get it. If I don't bow down, then people will say, a king of your stature was killed or was thrown out by his own son? David said to Hushai, if people know me to be the David that I am, what will they think about Hashem when my son throws me out and either kills me or whatever it is, takes over?
So he's abasing himself for Hashem's honor.
That's correct. David is saying to Hushai, I'm going to worship Avodah Zarah so that people will, exactly what you're saying, people will say, a king like that worship Avodah Zarah? But that will diminish me in their eyes, so that way there will not be a Chilul Hashem. Right now, the Chilul Hashem is of an unparalleled level. That the great David, one of the greatest people to ever walk the face of the earth, is being thrown out of his royal place by his own son. It's an unbelievable embarrassment. To who? To Hashem. Says David, if I worship Avodah Zarah, immediately that'll ruin my reputation. And then everybody will say, ah, of course Hashem threw him out. He deserves it. Look what he did. He worshipped Avodah Zarah. Now we see his true colors. Now we know he deserves everything he got. And it will not be a Chilul Hashem. It won't profane God's name. This is what the Gemara says. Now, as I said before, this explanation of the Gemara rings true because it doesn't make sense otherwise. What is he doing? He just stopped into Hashem in the previous pasuk. Otherwise, you can't read it. Like, what's he doing? So that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara continues the conversation. Hushai then said to David, why did you marry a Yefas Toar? Why did you marry...
What a conversation.
Why did you marry the woman in battle? Meaning Avshalom's mother. Why'd you marry her? So David said to Hushai, what do you mean? The Torah permits it. Hushai said to David, but you didn't understand the smichus. You didn't understand the juxtaposition between that statement in the Torah that permits the marrying of a Yefas Toar with the next paragraph of the Torah that talks about the Ben Sorer Umora, the wayward son. Mm-hmm. That it's true the Torah permits it, but a Yefas Toar is a risk for producing a Ben Sorer Umora. And therefore, here you did what the Torah permitted, but you didn't realize the risk involved in creating a son that could be wayward. And that is the end of the conversation. And then we pick up over here that David says to Hushai, why don't you go back and be the fifth column?
Right. What is the fifth column?
A spy who can pretend to be working for Avshalom, but in fact really
undercover agent.
Right. Now, this conversation between David and Avshalom and David and Hushai. So, David believes that it's likely he's going to lose. We already saw this before. When he sent the Aram back, he says, if Hashem doesn't want me to go back, he'll do with me as he pleases. And David recognizes he's being punished for what he did with Bathsheba. But David believes correctly that people are not going to interpret it that way. They're going to say, how could this possibly happen? And it will be a Chilul Hashem. And David therefore wants to save Hashem's honor. And the way he's going to do that is by hurting himself. By lowering himself, that will prevent the great desecration of Hashem's name. Similar, not exactly the same thing, but similar to what Aaron does with the golden calf, with the Egel Hazav, where he's trying to prevent things from being worse, and therefore he is the one who deals with the golden calf. The Gemara says that he did the golden calf himself, he built it himself, built the altar himself, because he said, this way, let the punishment fall on my head, it won't destroy me. But if the Jews do the sin, if they're the ones directly involved, Hashem will decimate them. Mm-hmm. Here David is trying to prevent a colossal Chilul Hashem. Hushai, when he realizes where David is coming from, now what is he going to say? Right? David is worried about the Chilul Hashem. So if you're Hushai, you would think what you need to do is somehow convince David that no, it's better that you don't worship Avodah Zarah. The Chilul Hashem won't be so bad. People will interpret it correctly, or whatever. He doesn't say that, because it wouldn't be true. David would see right through that. David is correct. It will be a colossal Chilul Hashem. So instead, Hushai redirects David and tries to point out to him part of the explanation for why this happened. So why'd you marry Yefas Toar? Meaning, if you're so upset over this, didn't you realize this was a risk? That this was going to happen? David says, what are you talking about? It's permitted to marry Yefas Toar. He says, no, it is permitted. But you didn't realize that the Torah is warning you this, something like this could happen. That stops David. Now, how does that stop David? How does that stop David? So, let's just interpret this first of all in the larger context. Avshalom didn't have to become rebellious. Just because he's the son of Yehoshua's Torah doesn't mean he must be rebellious. It just means that there is a strain of rebelliousness that's in him that could rear its ugly head. And unfortunately it did. We already showed with Avshalom the main issue he had was his gaiva, was his pride. With his beautiful hair and his stature and his charisma, and it got to his head. That was the problem. But that is what brought forth that which was latent in him, which is this rebelliousness, and it came out. Hushai is telling David, people will realize that this didn't just happen, that there is a strain of rebelliousness in Avshalom, because he comes from a Yehoshua's Torah, and therefore, although it's true that a king of your stature to be deposed by his own son is a terrible thing, and it is a Chilul Hashem, it's not as bad as you think, because people will realize that you did do something to trigger it. You married a Yehoshua's Torah. This is not out of the blue. So let's, even if you want to move away from the Bathsheba situation, which perhaps people won't necessarily connect the dots, but they're going to realize that you married Yehoshua's Torah, and that's what brought this about. Now let's think about it. If I'm a layman thinking about this after the fact, I say to myself, let's say Avshalom, God forbid, was successful in defeating David. How did this happen? Well, Avshalom is from Yehoshua's Torah. David married Yehoshua's Torah. Okay, I mean, so that brings about a rebellious strain. Then I said to myself, why did David marry Yehoshua's Torah? And one thing leads to another, and I'm thinking about David's marriages. And what am I naturally going to think of next? Bathsheba. You'll connect the dots. You'll click. It'll come back. It'll come to you that there is a series of connections here. David marrying a Yehoshua's Torah. David marrying Bathsheba. Bathsheba wasn't exactly right. Yehoshua's Torah was permitted, but there is a risk over there. And connecting the dots to bring about Avshalom, and it will therefore reduce the level of the Chilul Hashem. A person will be able to connect the dots. That is how Hushai is telling David that you don't need to diminish the Chilul Hashem. It is anyway inherently somewhat diminished. And that gives David the strength to then say, okay, I'm convinced he did not worship Avodah Zarah, and he goes on to continue formulating his plan using Hushai himself as the person who's going to undermine Achitophel. Hushai, in this exchange with David, is already demonstrating his cleverness, his wisdom, and more importantly, his ability to think on his feet. Just you have to put yourself in Hushai's shoes. Hushai is in terrible sorrow and mourning. There's dirt on his head. His clothes are torn. He comes up the mountain and he meets David, and David's about to bow down to Avodah Zarah. Most everyone just freezes. What am I supposed to do now? Hushai engages David in conversation and works David back to a place where David can be accepting of the situation and give up that plan of Avodah Zarah. So Hushai has demonstrated right in front of us with this conversation his ability to think on his feet, which will of course be critical, because when Achitophel gives us advice, it's going to be acted upon. Hushai is going to have to be very quick and very clever in order to turn things around against Achitophel.
So if David bowed down, did he start to worship
Avodah Zarah? The Gemara says he wanted to. Bikesh. He didn't actually do it.
Okay,
he didn't actually do it. Right.
Is this all on top of Har HaZaisim?
Not sure. See, we did see about Zaisim before. It doesn't say Har HaZaisim. It says the rise of olives. I'm not sure. We know it's somewhere in the proximity of Yerushalayim, but I don't know exactly where it was.
What's an Arki?
What's that? That's a good question. I think the Gemara says, and I'm not remembering correctly, I think it just means the place that he was from.
He's Jewish, though.
Yeah, he's Jewish. Hushai is Jewish. let's get the names mixed up. Itai Hagiti was not Jewish. Hushai Ha'arki is Jewish. Okay, now, let's go back to this Evyasar and Tzadok change. The change of who the Kohen Gadol is. Now, to follow this, as we go back in time, we know that Aaron had four sons. He had four sons. He had Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Isamar. Nadav and Avihu were killed when they did the wrong thing. That's this coming week's parsha. Acharei Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron, after the two sons of Aaron died, they did not have any children. So Elazar and Isamar are the remaining two Kohanim under Aaron, and they each have a line of Kohanim that follow them. Well, we talked about this a little bit before, but now we're going to flesh it out a little bit more. When Aaron died, his successor was Elazar. He was not his Bechor, but he was the older of his two remaining sons. So Elazar becomes his successor. When Elazar dies, who succeeds Elazar as the Kohen Gadol? It happens in Yehoshua, in Sefer Yehoshua. Who's Elazar's illustrious son?
Pinchas.
Pinchas becomes the next Kohen Gadol. So the line of the Kohuna Gedola follows Elazar's family down through the generations. The Gemara tells us that in the time of the Shoftim, when there were no kings, so we know that some things went wrong. One of the worst events of the time of the Shoftim was the event of Pilagesh Begiva, the concubine in Giva. We don't have time tonight to go through that entire story, but it triggered a civil war between the tribe of Binyamin and the rest of the Jewish people. The tribe of Binyamin was nearly wiped out through that civil war, and it was a terrible, sorry tale for us Jews. But the whole story was triggered because of a man who had a Pilagesh, a concubine, who got angry at her. She ran away, he chased after her, and things spiraled out of control from there. The Gemara tells us, the Medrash says, that there were no kings at that time. And at that time, there was no shofet either that was in full control of what was going on. Therefore, the responsibility of making sure that the Jews did not spiral into a civil war fell upon the Kohen Gadol, the leading Kohanim. Because we know we Jews have several types of leaders. We have the king, we have the leaders of Torah, and we also have the leaders of the Kohanim. And the Kohen Gadol was expected to be the one to keep things in check. And the line of Elazar failed. They did not prevent this calamity happening in the Jewish people. As a result, Hashem decreed that the Kohuna Gedola would shift from the family of Elazar to the family of Isamar. And Eli, the Kohen Gadol in the time of Shmuel, was from the family of Isamar. Eli's sons did not do the right thing, and therefore the decree was that his family would lose the Kohuna Gedola. Evyasar is a descendant of Eli. Evyasar is from Isamar, from that line. And here we have the Kohen Gadol switching back to the line of Elazar. Tzadok comes from Elazar. So now it shifted away from Elazar to Isamar in the time of Eli. Now it's shifting back to Elazar. Now, there is an unbelievable parallel between the Pilegesh Begiva and Shmuel's father Elkanah. The main character in Pilegesh Begiva was a Levi from Har Ephraim, from the mountain of Ephraim. When we're introduced to Elkanah in the beginning of Shmuel, we are told he is a Levi from Har Ephraim, from the mountain of Ephraim. There is a commentary of the Maharshal. He lived in the late 1500s. In the Gemara that says that they were the same person. That's a very difficult thing to accept. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, that Elkanah and the man of the Pilegesh Begiva story were the same person. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that that is not a mainstream approach. And anyway, the years, it would be very difficult to work that out. I mean, it means he would have to be very, very old to have worked that out. At any rate, but there seems to be a connection. Perhaps they're from the same family. Even if it's not the same person, it is possible that Elkanah is a descendant from that man of the Pilegesh Begiva story. In which case, Shmuel, who is the son of Elkanah, is also a descendant. So now, let's follow the thread. This is the first thread we're going to follow, and there's another thread we're going to pick up with. In the time of Pilegesh Begiva, the main character is this man, and things spiral out of control, and a civil war erupts. Our sages lay the blame for that calamity on the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol and the family of Elazar. And therefore, the Kohen Gadol switches to the family of Isamar and Eli. In the time of Eli, Eli's sons don't behave properly. Mm-hmm. Who comes to Eli to tell him that he's going to lose the Kohen Gadol and it's going to go back to the family of Elazar?
Shmuel.
First Elkanah and then Shmuel. So the same family or some connection between a Levi from Har Ephraim, the same one is now, the same line is coming to tell them, you're going to lose the Kohen Gadol. The whole reason why you got it was because of what happened to this family, this Levi from Har Ephraim, in the story of Pilegesh Begiva. That's what happened, which is why the Kohen Gadol got transferred, but now you're falling down on the job. And therefore, that same group of people, a Levi from Har Ephraim, is going to come and tell you, it's going back, you're losing it. It's going to go back to the family of Elazar. But it doesn't happen yet. So when does it happen? It happens here in this story of David's being deposed. So how do we understand that? Now, when we started the story, we said that Avshalom went to Beis Lechem in the 40th year. So we said 40th year of what? It's not the 40th year of David's reign. Doesn't work out. So we explained last time, it's the 40th year since the Jews asked for a king. Now when the Jews asked for a king, it was during the time of Shmuel. And Shmuel felt that the Jews were rejecting Shmuel. If the Jews were rejecting Shmuel, that would be very similar to over here where David is being rejected from the throne. David was being rejected from the throne and it was his own fault. He did something wrong in the time of Bathsheba and this is a form of a punishment. Shmuel thought that the Jews rejecting him was also a form of a punishment. What did he do to deserve it? Hashem says to Shmuel, and we read it last time, Hashem says to Shmuel, no, they're not rejecting you. You don't deserve to be rejected. You didn't do anything wrong. They're rejecting me. They don't want you because they don't want me. This is a rejection of God. This is not a rejection of you, Shmuel. This doesn't reflect upon you at all. This reflects upon me, Hashem. The Jews are rejecting me. Now, we mentioned last time that because the Jews rejected Hashem, then 40 years later, we talked about the number 40 last time, the institution that was created from that rejection, which is the royalty of the Jewish people, becomes compromised with this rebellion of Avshalom. But Shmuel was not rejected. So Shmuel, who is the one who told Eli that there's going to be a switch from the family of Isamar back to Elazar, he's not rejected. And so therefore, everything Shmuel said is still just as much in force. He didn't do anything wrong. Everything is, Shmuel is the same as always. When does it happen that the family of Isamar loses the Kohuna Gedola to the family of Elazar? When there's a weakness in the monarchy, when there's a weakness in the royalty, when the royalty is compromised. Why did Elazar's family originally lose the Kohuna Gedola to Isamar's family back in the time of Pelegesh Begiva? Because there was no monarchy, and who was supposed to be shepherding the people in the absence of a monarchy? Kohen Gadol. And he didn't do it. Now, when there's a weakness in the monarchy, this is when it happens. There's a weakness in the monarchy. Who, therefore, should step in and provide leadership? The Kohen Gadol. Which Kohen Gadol? Not Isamar's family. They were given a chance, but under Eli, on Eli's children, they didn't do it properly. So it's going to go back to Elazar's family, and Elazar's family will now be given a second chance. You didn't take care of the Jews the last time. It wasn't a weakness in the monarchy, but there was no monarchy, and you were expected to. Well, now there's a weakness in the monarchy. You need to step up to the plate. Let's see what you do. So here is where the fulfillment of what Shmuel said takes place. And the monarchy, the Kohuna Gedola, now shifts back from Isamar's family to Elazar's family, from Avyasar to Tzadok. And that's why it happens at this moment, particularly when David is now at his lowest ebb. He's being forced out of Yerushalayim. The monarchy is being compromised and being challenged. Now there is a change of Isamar back to Elazar. This would never have happened as long as Shmuel was alive, because as long as Shmuel was alive, Shmuel was shepherding the people. Shmuel was a faithful servant shepherding the people in the absence of a monarch. He should never have been rejected. He should never have been replaced by a king. Not until his death. The Jews jumped the gun because Shmuel was doing the job. But here, where the monarchy itself has been compromised, now we have the change. So again, just to put this pieces, the steps all together, we start with Elazar's family being the Kohuna Gedola. The story of Pelegesh Begiva, which takes place with a Levi from Har Ephraim. There is a great need for the Jewish people to be led, and the family of Elazar doesn't do it. They lose the Kohuna Gedola, and it shifts to Isamar's family. Isamar's family leads, but then in the time of Eli, Eli's sons don't shepherd the people properly. And so a Levi from Har Ephraim, Elkanah, and his son Shmuel come to Eli and say, now it's going to go back to the family of Elazar. But when does it happen? Not then. It's going to happen the next time the Jews are in dire need of leadership and there is none. At that point in time, there is leadership. Eli's first of all leading, and then Shmuel's leading. There's no weakness in the leadership. When the Jews reject Shmuel, that's not because of a weakness in Shmuel's leadership. Shmuel's doing a great job. Hashem says, they're rejecting me. But Hashem says, because they rejected me, I am going to create a weakness in this monarchy that they're trying to set up now. That's going to happen 40 years later. When that happens 40 years later, and there's a weakness in the monarchy, now there's a need for the Kahuna Gedola to step in and shepherd the people. And that's the point in time when the shift goes back from Isamar's family to Elazar's family, for Elazar's family to prove that they can, in fact, step in when the monarchy is compromised. And that's when it goes from Aviasar over to Tzadok. Now, we're not done with this, as I mentioned when we read it, because Aviasar is still on the scene. It's just that he's not the main leader of the Kuhuna. It's not going to be until Shlomo takes over that Aviasar will be completely removed from the leadership of the Kuhuna Gedola, and it will be completely in Tzadok's hands. But this is the beginning step of that transition. Okay.
Will that be the end of Isamar?
Well, as Kohen Gadol, as far as I know, it remains with Elazar forever after, as far as I know.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.